Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I'm going to whine just for a moment. I don't mean to, but honesty compels me to admit. I'm very tired doing the show right now. We wanted to do vacation shows, and so we said, well, let's just get them knocked out. The truth is that we actually recorded these in like two shifts. We did the John Stinchcomb interview that you've heard the last 4 days. We did that one day last week. We did the Jeff Sindel interview you're going to hear today. We did that last Wednesday there as well. And somehow I thought that was going to make everything easier. Hey, we'll get the interviews knocked out. We'll just, you know, do the rest of this thing. They're shorter shows this week. Just, you know, by virtue of we don't really have time to, you know, record 17 hours worth of broadcast. But this will be easy. This will be a blast. Well, this is the fifth of all of these. And I've done this a few times before over the years where you think it's just going to be nothing to knock out five shows and you're kind of dragging before it's all said and done. I'm sort of dragging right now. So hopefully it's been a fun experience. We wanted to be with you in podcast form and video form. And for those of you that connect with us, we appreciate you doing that. Looking forward to being back in our normal format on Monday. And then we will be no days off really for the rest of this run here through the what we hope is going to be an announcement of the season's return. What we think is going to be a really fun ride, no matter how it goes. We'll be doing all of that with you coming up here pretty soon. Let me spend one more time, though, and I do have the Own the East t-shirt on. Once again, disclaimer, I have not been wearing this for a full week. As I said before, we just did a full week's of shows here at once, and I wanted to be wearing the Own the East t-shirt for this because I wanted to really do our Own the East season preview in style. Connor Riley, who's been pre-recording these shows, imagine how frustrated he's already pretty frustrated with me. Imagine how frustrated he would be if I wanted to maintain some sense of normalcy and change clothes between each and every show to have five different outfits. I believe there's a chance we may have had an episode of Workplace Violence if I had told him I wanted to do that. So I stay dressed the same way. Own the East seemed like a pretty good t-shirt to do that with. And so let me begin today with where I started the week. We'll bring this all full circle. I told you on Monday that Georgia has a chance to make a pretty, you know, interesting piece of history, to win a division for a fourth straight year. That's what Own the East has always been about. You know, not just winning the division, but winning it again and again and again, setting yourself up for the best chance of success. If Georgia were to own the East for a fourth straight this year, I can promise this, Florida would hate it because that's Georgia matching what their legendary coach Steve Spurrier once did. No one's done it since then. Alabama would hate it because they want to tell you that Kirby Smart's not what Georgia fans think he is as a coach. This would be proof of them potentially being wrong about that. Nick Saban himself has not won a division 4 years in a row. He hasn't won the SEC West 4 years in a row. Now, I'm not telling you that four straight divisions is as good as national championships, something that Nick Saban has done, but I am telling you that if you're looking for evidence that Kirby Smart's first 5 years of his coaching career have kind of gotten off to a good start, that'd be a pretty good place to potentially prove that for 6 years. Once he finishes up this upcoming year, that'd be a pretty good way to prove all of that. With the way all of that plays out, I guess this will be his fifth year coming up. This is part of the problem when you've done five shows in a day. All of a sudden, you can't really think about what you're doing anymore. The point here is this. If Georgia wins its division, it has a chance to do something also pretty cool this year, which is beat Alabama for a second time. Win in Tuscaloosa in September, assuming the game is played then, and then playing them again in December. Can Georgia beat Alabama twice? I think the answer to that question is yes. In fact, I'll have some fun with you and predict that will happen. I've been telling you this for months, that I thought that Georgia would get over the hump against Alabama in a huge way this season by beating the Crimson Tide two times in the same year. However, what I'm not going to do, because I have too much respect for you, I'm not going to insult your intelligence by telling you it's going to be easy. Think about everything we've talked about thus far this week. Our Own the East season preview looking at quarterbacks. Our Own the East season preview looking at running backs, looking at wide receivers, looking at the defense. We haven't really gotten into the kicker situation as much, but Alabama shows you in 2017 you can win the national championship even if you don't have a great kicker. We haven't done, you know, a ton on the offensive line in particular this week, but with guys like John Stinchcomb, we've done plenty of that before. We'll do plenty more of that again, but factor them into this conversation for right now. Here is the way in which Georgia beats Alabama twice in a season and enjoys the kind of success that really makes you want college football to find a way to be on the football field coming up this fall. You've got to have the top end across the board. You've got to have high-end quarterback play, high-end running back play, elite wide receiver play, defense as good as advertised, offensive line emphatically answering its questions. You got to have it across the board. Because here is the one thing that we'll say about Alabama, and y'all know I love poking fun at Nick Saban. I like talking bad about Alabama when there's an opportunity to do that. But the one thing you've got to acknowledge is that Alabama remains, as the great Dusty Rhodes would have said, kind of the bull of the woods. They're not the reigning national champion, but they are, to mix metaphors here, kind of like what Mike Tyson used to be, the baddest man on the planet, the baddest team on the planet, still the most prestigious win you can get. LSU, as I said before, won the national champion. They beat last year's reigning national champion, you know, Clemson along the way. And yet, you know, ultimately, the game against Alabama, the win you earn there against Alabama that for LSU that stands as the most prestigious win in that situation. It's just kind of what it is. For Georgia, it'll be no different. Prestigious wins coming against Alabama, and the way that you get them is to realize that blue chip ratio, as measured by Bud Elliott, 24/7 Sports, things like that, measurably, just slightly, Alabama still is the more talented team. It's still the most talented team in the country. So the pathway for how you get it done, how do you beat Alabama twice? You have to be as good as you hope you can be across the board in every position. It's not an easy thing to do, but it's also not an impossible thing to do either. And it's one of the things that makes this season fun to think about how it potentially comes into place for Georgia. And obviously, we'll talk more about that. As far as my own thoughts on the two divisions here real quick, let me give that to you. So in the SEC West, the way in which I think that Georgia gets to play Alabama twice, because I do think Alabama wins the division, I can't really make that strong of a case for anybody else winning it. My number two team would be Texas A&M, but I told you on yesterday's show that A&M just doesn't run the ball well enough. They've had issues stopping the run. I think the lack of physicality hurts you against a team like Alabama, who's trying to find its own level of physicality. But A&M's just not solid there when it comes to that. I'll take Auburn third in the SEC West because, as I mentioned to you earlier this week, even though Auburn loses a lot defensively, there is still some stuff for Kevin Steele to play with there, and Bo Nix probably gets better. I think that Chad Morris is an impact higher, assuming that Gus Malzahn will trust him. I think Auburn's your number three team in the SEC West, which, as you know, still means you're a pretty good team, nationally speaking. LSU, I have falling all the way to fourth. I don't know that you've got another great player in this defense besides Derek Stingley, and I'm not really quite sure offensively. It's not for me replacing Joe Burrow, it's replacing Joe Brady that I think is really, really difficult. And because of that, LSU falls to the middle of the pack. Frankly, Arkansas, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, I don't care that much about ranking. I'll leave that for someone else to do. In the SEC East, obviously I've got Georgia winning the division, and I've got Florida finishing second. The one thing I'll say about Florida, and when we did our Own the East preview of the Gators not too long ago, I try to do it from kind of an objective standpoint. Normally, I'm always pointing out all the ways in which people are wrong and praising Florida, but I wanted to tell you on the show about a week or so ago, I wanted to tell you, here's some of the things that, you know, you do got to watch out for when you play Florida. The other kind of, as close to a compliment as I guess I'll give the Gators, under Dan Mullen, the one thing that has not been an issue at all are losing games against lesser competition. Now, Florida came close to a couple of games that it could have lost. But even in 2018, when it lost to Kentucky, Kentucky was just a better team in comparison to Florida that year. You don't, you know, necessarily say that was Florida, you know, losing a game it should have won. Kentucky was better, at least in my mind. I think they were. You know, Florida handled its business late, even after losing to Georgia, handled its business against lesser competition a year ago. May have gotten saved by the refs against South Carolina, I'll grant you that, and could have lost the Miami game, I'll grant you that. And I guess, you know, the Kentucky game was a little bit up in the air. But for the most part, Florida's handled its business against lesser competition. So if you're looking for Florida to make it easy on you by losing some games that it shouldn't, probably not going to happen, especially given the way in which right now the Florida schedule on paper looks to be pretty easy. The one semi-surprise I'll give you out of the SEC East is I've got South Carolina finishing third. I don't know how many games teams are going to play this year, but I believe that South Carolina has a really good chance of finishing with a winning record. I would not be surprised if Tennessee can't match that. Vols have a good offensive line, and I think that Jim Chaney is a better offensive coordinator than some Georgia fans give him credit for. There's still some questions about how they're going to run the ball. They have, I think, a lot lost and missing from the wide receiver spots there. And you're still trying to figure out your quarterback situation. Defensively, they'll probably be fine, especially in the secondary. But I don't think that Tennessee finishes with the starts this season with the momentum it finished last year with. And I think that South Carolina is going to be better than its four-win mark from a year ago. So give me Gamecocks third in the East. I'll take Tennessee fourth. And once again, Missouri, Kentucky, Vanderbilt, other than Vanderbilt finishing last, I don't really have much of an opinion about the bottom part of the division. So it's kind of a vacation tradition for us to do some predictions. That's kind of where I feel like the two divisions of the SEC are going. Bama, then A&M, then Auburn, then LSU in the West. Georgia, then Florida, then South Carolina, Tennessee in the East. And the bottom half will sort itself out. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Kroger. Final pre-recorded show for us before we're back in earnest on Monday on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio on 960 The Ref in Athens, podcast forms wherever you find them. Been a great week for me to be able to be away with my friends and family. At least I'm anticipating that it's been a great week. I'm certainly grateful for you for making it be possible for me. Generous enough to allow me to take some time off. Appreciate that. Also, huge thanks to Kroger for making it all possible there as well. Back to school. When we get back into town, that's the next big thing. We're expecting to be back in school and loading up on those school supplies, lunch items, things like that. Kroger will cover you for all of that. They bring Dog Nation Daily to you here today. We've got Jeff Sintel coming up. A lot of recruiting stuff with Jeff. It's really good. Let me do very quickly before we get there. If I'm making predictions on the SEC divisions, might as well predict the college football playoff there as well. By the way, I think I misspoke earlier talking about who LSU beat for the national championships. Ohio State, they beat. This goes to show you. I'm telling you, man, I cannot remember anything. I'm a little punchy right now after having done a bunch of shows. The point is, whoever was in the playoff a year ago, who can remember these kinds of things, here is who I think is going to be in the playoff this year. Obviously, I have Georgia going to the college football playoff. In normal situations, I think it's almost impossible to imagine a scenario in which Ohio State and Clemson don't make it. No one's more naturally contrarian than me, and that's not something I do as an act. Anyone who spends any time with me knows that I just have a very weird way of looking at the world. I don't see things the same way other people do. I'd love to make a case for someone other than Clemson, Ohio State, to make the college football playoff, but assuming this is a somewhat normal season, I can't argue against the Tigers or the Buckeyes there in that regard. I will give you a wild card for the fourth team. It's not Oklahoma. I'm tired of seeing them in the playoff. I don't think they deserve to be there. I'm not even sure the Pac-12 is going to play this year. And if they do, you know, odds are they won't have a playoff-worthy team. They typically don't. Give me Texas. Connor had the horns up. He already knew that was coming. Yeah, give me the Longhorns here. More close losses a year ago than you realize. Still plenty of talent. I don't like Tom Herman, but I think he's probably a good coach. They have experience at quarterback the last couple of years. That seemed to matter. Certainly it did with Joe Burrow. Ellinger brings that. You know, I'm not going to get into the Texas is back hysteria, but somebody's got to be your fourth team. I think there's a chance it could be the Longhorns. So give me Longhorns, Clemson, Ohio State, and Georgia for the college football playoff. And as far as who wins those games, I'm sure we'll talk about that at some point in the near future. Later on, we'll preview the rest of the SEC West that we haven't touched on yet as we kind of wrap up our Own the East preview week here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. But for now, it's a Friday staple. It's recruiting talk. It's Jeff Sintel, and we hope you enjoy it.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
In one respect, it's a traditional Friday staple for us, talking some recruiting with Jeff Sintel. What makes this a bit different is we have recorded this several days in advance because I am enjoying my vacation right now, spending some time away from work, and yet the show must go on, so we're doing a little bit of that with Jeff right now. So a lot of what we do won't be, you know, all that specific to the moment when it comes to recruiting. Who knows how things, you know, change over the course of days, but it is a great time to still catch up. I haven't talked to Jeff in a while. Jeff himself has been enjoying a bit of a vacation, so this is a good chance for us to do that. Jeff, welcome to the program. Hope you're doing well.
Hey, Brandon, I'm doing great. I guess by now you'll have your boat shoes on, you might have something in your cup, and you might be trying to find some good seafood or some good barbecue off the Georgia coast. I might imagine, if that's what my intel usually tells me about a Brandon Adams vacation.
Well, officially speaking, we're just given the mood in the world right now. We're not getting very specific about what the vacation plans are, but let me just say I'm enjoying some time away from work. How does that sound? Is that fair?
Brandon, that sounds great. Whatever Dog Nation Daily needs, Dog Nation Daily gets. I'm just shocked that the beard couldn't last until your vacation, man. You gonna come back with a new beard?
Well, that was honestly the truth. Is knowing I was gonna be away from work for a while and in some form or fashion, at least outdoors, I didn't want the two-tone thing of, you know, eventually you're gonna have to shave it. It's hot. It's summertime, right? And I didn't want to wait too late into the summer to shave it. The average person doesn't care about this. I realize that because you're going to be, you know, like kind of somewhat tan up top, a little bit more pale, you know, where the facial hair once was. That was the scenario in which I was trying to avoid.
There you go, folks. Beard intel, man. We find it all here on Dog Nation.
So let me do this for a second, just to kind of begin our conversation this way. We are recording this, you know, prior to at least one announcement that we know is going to go down. But just generally speaking, you know, not just for Georgia, but just for the recruiting climate around the 2021 class overall, you know, what are your thoughts right now on how, you know, seemingly, you know, maybe Georgia's been impacted by the lack of visits? It seems like this is a weird cycle for Clemson, I would say. They've had at least two high-profile commitments so far this cycle. That's not something we're expecting to see from them. Obviously, there are more important things in the world than recruiting, but that is what you and I talk about together. When you look at the way that the coronavirus has impacted all of this, I mean, what are your thoughts on where things currently stand and just how many big sweeping changes in terms of the tone of the Georgia class or the mood of the nation? How much is that likely to change the more things kind of evolve over the course of the next couple of months?
Yeah, you know, Brandon, I guess I'm kind of maybe puzzled is the word, but I kind of look at this and where we're kind of at right now. And, you know, people are wondering about Terrence Ferguson and what he's going to do and how that will affect Amarius Mims and, you know, what's going to happen with Georgia doesn't get any visits. And I think there's a great sense of lamentation going on where I think people are just trying to find, you know, I still think that the Georgia football program and especially the recruiting effort for 2021 is, you know, not just silver cloud, but one of those big silver britches type cloud. But everybody starts wondering about this or wondering about that. And, you know, there's no end in sight for when Georgia can do what it does best. That is get in front of guys on the campus and sell all the things that make Georgia special. So I think people are a little nervy neat about it, but I just, you know, I come off vacation and I kind of feel like, you know, that movie, everybody knows Saving Private Ryan, you know, that point when everybody's fighting in the platoon and Tom Hanks finally has to say, I'm an English teacher. I feel like I got to just say, guys, hold on. Just wait a couple months, man. Just wait a couple months. But like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Brandon, but the quick math is, A, Georgia got a commitment from a guy that was committed to Florida, or not committed to Florida, but Florida was his last visit. He was leaning towards Florida, at least publicly, but then he'd been a silent commitment to Georgia since mid-May, and that's Jamon Dumas Johnson. They get a commitment from a wide receiver that not a lot of people had heard of, but, you know, Brandon, he's a college graduate, and we don't have to really read too deep into the tea leaves to figure out that Mitchell, this young man, he was more valued by the staff, or at least is valued as the first wide receiver commitment in the class. Is, you know, some bigger names that everybody's been talking around for 3 or 4 months now in terms of Georgia targets and wide receivers. Broderick Jones news comes out. That's not a dire news. And, oh, by the way, Georgia gets immediate eligibility from JT Daniels coming out of USC. And, oh, let's not forget, an elite tight end, an All-American tight end, makes another trip on his own dime from California to check out Georgia for an out-of-pocket, not quite an official visit, not quite an unofficial visit. And while he's doing that, he hangs and has breakfast with a couple of commits, and he also hangs out with Brock Vandegrift and his family, even when Brock Vandegrift's not around. To me, that seems like a bushel or so of some pretty good news, but everybody keeps fixating on what's not happening instead of what is.
Yeah, I mean, I would say in defense of the fan on that, all the stuff you described is all well and good, but that's not the recipe for a number one overall class. The recipe for the number one overall class are some of the players we've either seen outright end up other places, and in the case of Tony Grimes, completely go off the board because he has officially decided to reclassify, or in other cases, seeing guys that are in-state, prime Georgia targets, seemingly leaning other places. It doesn't mean it's the end of the world, but, you know, those are recruiting battles that Georgia fans expected to see their team win. And as of right now, it's certainly not obvious that Georgia will ultimately win those. I mean, I'll defend the fans here a little bit, Jeff, from the standpoint that some of this is unexpectedly bad news.
Well, I think that's the first part. I mean, I don't know if anybody can sit there and say, you know, maybe it's a reset of expectations that are necessary where, I'm not going to say, you know, Georgia needs to fill needs and it'll be fine. No, the definition for a Kirby Smart class is a 1, 2, or 3 class. I just don't know if the number one class is kind of possible or attainable until the visits start happening.
Yeah.
You know, Georgia has guys like Corey Foreman. Georgia has guys like Mason Smith. Georgia has guys, you know, you keep going up and down the list, Donovan Edwards, Smile Munden Jr. There's a lot of names, Amarius Mims, James Williams, where visits, you know, kind of need to happen for a lot of those guys and for Georgia to get the momentum they need. And, you know, that's just not happening right now. And, Brandon, we don't know when that will happen. I mean, I've even started looking at models just to be, you know, prepared and nuanced in what I do is, you know what, let's say there's not a season, Brandon, and I'm not trying to speak that in the universe, but in the recruiting world, well, Georgia needed 15, 16, 17 guys to either move on to the NFL or exhaust their eligibility after their senior year to create a lot of scholarships for this 2021 class. And right now, I'm sure this wasn't the intent, but Georgia seems very kind of reserved and judicious because it only has 13 guys committed in the class right now. I mean, and somewhere, Brandon, unless the NCAA radically changes some policy, I don't know how you would deal with a backlog. You know, Georgia's already going to have, you know, belt tightening every year because it wants to be right at the 85 in terms of student athletes on scholarship. But when you don't have guys playing, you don't have to have graduating, you don't have guys deciding that their best chance to play elsewhere, and they maybe learn that from the practice field, I guess the word backlog comes to mind. And, you know, there's so many areas, Brandon, where, like, you think about it, Georgia did so well at wide receiver. Georgia did so well at offensive line last year that you wonder, like, you know, who are the really special, tangible, impactful guys in this class anymore that can really move the needle when they sign or they choose Georgia on whatever the de facto eventual signing date might be. And, you know, the names just get smaller and smaller about the guys that could immediately galvanize or anchor this class and get on the field fast for Georgia, considering the depth that they have. I mean, I think a lot of people, if, you know, a name here, an inside linebacker, a defensive lineman would settle in, and maybe the five-star offensive tackle, Amarius Mims as well, and that decision's coming in mid-August, I think some people would feel better. But, you know, I don't want to say Georgia's ever a program that makes the best out of or audibles and makes the best out of unique situations because it just recruits at such a high level. It's kind of like the only way I think of it, Brandon, is someone gave you about 11 minutes every day to do your show. You're not just going to be able to make the same point and get your words across with the candor, with the expertise, and with the polish you're accustomed to when your sample size for doing what you do has been diminished significantly.
I think that's fair, and I want to follow that up with one of the things that you'll see Georgia fans saying, and sometimes it's on our own forum at forum.dognation.com, is that somehow Georgia hasn't properly adjusted to the new world where visits are not possible, that other programs may be doing better with that. You know, I guess Alabama would be the one that comes to mind right now on a little bit of a recruiting heater as of late, not using visits for that, just I guess relying on, you know, the other aspects of the program. How fair do you think it is to say that maybe Georgia didn't pivot quickly enough to having to recruit without being able to benefit from visits, something that Georgia seemingly always uses to great effect?
Yeah, it's just different because, you know, Brandon, the other thing is, you know, we remember the words of Kirby Smart about he had decided and he'd shown last year that the senior year is going to matter. I think my count that I always keep in the back of my mind is I think Georgia offered 5 or 6 prospects last year that eventually signed after their senior seasons of high school football. And you know what Georgia likes to do is they like those team camps. They like to get guys into camp. They like to watch them run. They like to verify heights, weights, and times. They like to see how they can get coached up. They see how hard they can take hard coaching and being pushed. They want to see them in spring practice. They want to see them, how their teammates respond to them, how their school community responds to them. They want to see how they accept coaching. They want to see how they practice. They want to see all those things. They want to hear it from a coach's ears and see it up close. And they just don't get these opportunities right now to do that. They don't get the you know, whether it's the bonding that they did with scavenger hunt and or what they did with the Georgia machine with the summer cookout, or them coming in for G-Day, or them watching Georgia practice. It's like the big cogs about how Georgia was rolling on, and you know, you could just almost Xerox out Georgia was going to have a top one, top two, top three class the way things have been going. And now Georgia's playbook and Georgia's plan, and again, still, they don't have to reach or look for a lot of guys, but you know, there's a difference in taking up to 19, 20 commitments. Georgia never wanted to be that program like a Tennessee or others. They wanted to be judicious and take their time because that was kind of the sweet spot that Kirby Smart and Georgia have kind of fitting into over the last couple of cycles, and it's worked out so well. But you know, now you've got transition of the offensive line, you've got a new install at offense, and it's a lot of things where people are waiting to see, you know, if Georgia's really going to be Georgia. And I guess I gotta kind of remind folks that I don't know where you put him on your ledger, Brandon, or your heart, you know Georgia fan ledger, but you got to include JT Daniels as a recruit somewhere in some class. And for me, I would have to include him in the, you know, the mid 2020 cycle now, because he's going to play. But you know, that's also a staggering recruit. I think that's as good a recruit as Georgia will bring in the year 2020 is JT Daniels. Got to remember, before he reclassified to 2018, JT Daniels was the number one overall prospect for the 2019 class. And you know, we shared on the forum some thoughts about JT. Brennan, if you know, there was a week he was out in San Antonio with everybody else, Trevor Lawrence, all the other quarterbacks, and JT looked like that week from a lot of people, a lot of perspectives, not just mine own, that he was throwing the ball as well as anybody, any All-American in the country out there in San Antonio that week. And I tell you, Brandon, don't ask me to go ahead and throw stakes on the table about who I think winds up with a quarterback job at Georgia, should there be a season and everything, because I'm probably not going to name the popular incumbent if I had to.
Well, that's very interesting. I look forward to watching how that all plays out. And you're right, Daniels is certainly a name to consider in all of that. Let me kind of finish on a little broader topic, hopefully a positive one. When you look at what's on the horizon, whether it be, I think there's the potential for a lot of good news here, whether it be some big recruiting stuff, maybe coming Georgia's way. Obviously, you know, you mentioned a name like Brock Bauer, someone that seems to be in, you know, pretty good standing with UGA at the moment. When you think about the return of high school football, you know, different states taking different, you know, tacks with that, but it seems like we get the occasional good news on that front. For someone like you, ear to the ground on recruiting, whether it be football players playing somewhere again, you know, good news for Georgia in recruiting, what are the next few weeks, couple of months, summer turn to fall? What does that look like in your mind?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think varying degrees of schools and communities will try to, what was it? I think Florida AD Scott Strickland said recently this week that he said they're going to try and run out every ground ball to flesh out every contingency to make sure if numbers change or the spike reverses, then they'll be prepared and in place to move forward. I think you're going to see a lot of communities that are still trying to figure out whether high school football is even a thought for this fall. You know, man, Brandon, that just stings me, because there's so many players that I call it swallow the grow up pill, where they lose 40 pounds, or they change their body, or they're a defensive lineman that discovers that they're probably a better offensive tackle. You know, the wide receiver who becomes a tight end. You know, there's so many players that it finally crystallizes for it those first three or four games, and they're a totally new man. They've devoted themselves. They've changed their bodies. And, you know, those guys will never get seen. Those guys will never be found, especially those fringe players that were, you know, maybe good enough to play for an Arkansas or Mississippi State or an Ole Miss or Kentucky in the SEC, but they make that jump, and now they're good enough to play at a Georgia, Florida, Alabama, the big heavyweights of the conference as well. And you don't get that chance for them to show how much they've gotten better. And you see these players, and I said the word backlog earlier, and that's a backlog of high school players too. You even hear that junior college football, Brandon's not going to happen this fall either. A name like Dejon Nugget Warren, he's not going to be evaluated anymore. He's not going to be seen anymore. And you know, none of these guys are going to play junior college football in the spring. They must rest their case on the tape that they kind of have now, and you know what they've done so far. And it's almost like there's a whole group of people, whether, you know, the decommitments will come, Brandon. I think the bust will be a big thing in this class, but you'll also see a lot of players that for whatever reason, they end up in junior college football or they don't get the chance, so they try to prolong things. Maybe they go to D1AA, maybe they go to Division II, but, you know, the thing here is the money engine for college football. All that stuff needs to happen for all these players to still get found and seen and evaluated when, you know, and this, Brennan, here's the reality of all this is this. We're only a couple of weeks away from all these coaches going, you know what? We got to focus on a season if there is a season, or if there's not going to be a season, what that looks like going forward. And no one's experienced that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think that's all really well said. When you think about these players who are fighting for their opportunity to be on a field and fighting for their opportunity to get seen by a college coach, you realize that the college football discussion is about so much more than just the finances of you know, the money made by playing the sport. Lives are also impacted for the better, I believe, there as well. And I think that's an important point in all of this. Jeff, thanks for being here today on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. We certainly hope that you're getting ready for a great weekend, and we'll look forward to speaking to you back again on our program very soon.
All right, guys. Catch you next time. Have a great weekend.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Really good to have Jeff Sintel sit down, spend some time talking some recruiting stuff with us. And, you know, I wanted to get that kind of big picture scenario of where this is going. You know, where the good news is going to be coming from Georgia. And as I mentioned with Jeff, a lot of this is not just good news about who chooses UGA, but good news about seeing these high school teams playing. I said this on one of our shows last week, and it's kind of a, I guess, a crackpot theory in a way, but I really believe that football is a sport where things trickle up more so than trickle down. The willingness of high school teams to play, and I think a lot of teams, certainly around the South, states around the South are going to try to do that. As high school football gets back going here again, I think the spirit of that trickles up to college, and the NFL is just going to do what it's going to do anyway in this regard. But if you're certainly hoping that college football returns, and why would you not be? The return of high school football and more good news on that front, I do think, gives more cover for college football to get back to doing what it wants to do there as well. All right, SEC Through here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger, as I told you before. Still a chance to get over to Kroger for obviously your back to school items, things like that. But you know what? It's also a great chance to take advantage of the end of summer here, too. Patio furniture, outdoor stuff, toys for the kids to play with. Great savings on that at Kroger, too. So check that out while supplies last. So let's do the rest of the SEC West here for a moment with Ole Miss, with Mississippi State, with Arkansas. Now, by now, if you are a very, very regular listener to Dog Nation Daily, the one thing that you know is I'm actually fairly high on Sam Pittman in Arkansas, but only to the tune of expectations and comparison to expectations. Their Vegas over-under number is about 3.5. Could I see Arkansas winning 4 games this season? And once again, I'm saying this on the basis of a 12-game season. Early in the show, you heard me not even be able to remember who made the playoff a year ago because I'm so punchy from having done all these vacation recordings. The idea of what an over-under would be for a team if you're only playing 9 games or 10 games, I literally don't even have the capacity to think about that. So we're operating on the assumption of a 12-game schedule right now. But I think that Sam Pittman could be on the verge of building something in Arkansas. I think they're a little tougher out this year than you might realize. I don't think that Felipe Franks is a good quarterback for a team that wants to contend, but for a quarterback, for a program that wants to avoid the cellar in the SEC, Franks may not be quite so bad. I think he could help out there. I've also said long-term, I think that Arkansas could make a bowl before Ole Miss or Mississippi State do. That's how much I think that both Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach are going to struggle. Ultimately, the thing I like about Arkansas is the good coordinator hires. Barry Odom's presence on that Arkansas defense, I think it matters. Kendall Briles, former Broyles Award finalist, I think that he's a very valuable commodity. I think that Arkansas under Sam Pittman looks like a real program. And, you know, Pittman talking about him as the Arkansas head coach is not the kind of thing that I thought we would be doing a year ago, but here we are now, and I don't think it's such a bad idea given the way that it's all kind of playing out at the moment. Mississippi State on the field this year I think is interesting. Ultimately, I don't think that Mike Leach is a good mix for the SEC. I've been very clear about saying that. But when you think about quarterbacks that Georgia could have had, Georgia's brought in 2 transfer quarterbacks this offseason. I think they both have a chance to be good for UGA. But there'll be an inevitable comparison to KJ Costello's, the transfer quarterback at Mississippi State. This is a guy that went healthy at Stanford, that put up some good numbers, was one of those guys that I guess I kind of assume might be on the Georgia radar at one point. Who knows if that was ever even really a consideration. But quarterbacks typically put up huge numbers with Mike Leach. I would expect that to be true for Costello. I don't think it leads to many wins, but I expect it to be pretty big numbers. And also, you know, that Kylan Hill is a terrific running back there for the Bulldogs. So offensively, they should be fine. I just don't think this is a very good team. I don't think they'll win many games, nor do I think that Leach is going to be particularly good at just managing the situation. It's a Starkville, Mississippi may seem like a small town, but it's a very different atmosphere compared to Pullman, Washington, Lubbock, Texas, remote outposts where, you know, frankly, there's just not a lot of attention paid to you. There's nowhere to hide and be anonymous in the SEC. I think that Leach struggles because of that. As far as Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss, I think there's a perception of Kiffin that's very different than the one that exists in reality. I think that Kiffin is this swashbuckling personality when he's not coaching the SEC. How many really bold, brazen tweets have you seen from Kiffin since he's been Ole Miss coach? There have been a couple of moments here and there, but this thing in which he used to always be zinging this and, you know, a zinger there, you know, this, the outspokenness of Lane Kiffin, that's never quite matched up with what you see in person. You know, once the game started being played in his first year at Tennessee, all of a sudden the Lane Kiffin that's turning in Urban Meyer for supposed NCAA violations, well, that kind of stuff didn't happen. I like both quarterbacks at Ole Miss. I think that in the right circumstances, both Matt Corral and John Rhys Plumlee can be good players. But I think that Kiffin as a personality works as long as he's not coaching. I think once he starts coaching and being a head coach somewhere, frankly, I think he gets a little bit nervous. I think we're going to see a nervous version of Lane Kiffin that's nowhere near as cool as the image that has been projected onto him. So one more time, as we say goodbye to you today, let me just give you a huge thank you. As I said before, I'm always really aware of how the shows are maybe different than you come to expect them to be. Shorter, a little bit different content because it's kind of pre-planned content, not reacting to the news of the day. And I never want to take your time for granted. So if you've chosen to be with us here on our vacation week on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger, huge thank you on that. And if you're a radio listener who's kind of popped over to be with us on some of our other platforms this week, we'll look forward to being back with you on 960 The Ref again next week there as well. So major thanks to all of you. Big thanks to Connor Riley as well, too. Connor's put in huge work to help get these shows together. That's no easy feat. So big thanks to Connor on that front. I really appreciate you being here. Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. Hope you're getting ready for a great weekend. I'll give you the Gatorator Updater. 1,364 days. That's how long since Florida's beaten Georgia. You'll have a great day. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. I'll see you back in person again on Monday.